Welcome to the GBC Big Three Podcast, a weekly podcast from Gymea Baptist Church in which we unpack three big questions raised by the previous Sunday's sermon. I'm your host, Mark Rader, and with me is nobody else. Well, just you listening here today. Our normal hosts, Matt Willis and Jess Baker, are both on leave, but we thought that with the series that we're doing in January, Jesus and the Sydney Morning Herald, it would be appropriate to nonetheless do a bit of a summer series before they get back. Jesus and the Sydney Morning Herald is a series that we have done a number of Januaries in the last number of years, where we reflect on contemporary issues from the perspective of faith. Basically, whatever's in the news, what's trending, what are people talking about, and what can we say about that from the perspective of faith? The topics that we're going to be looking at this January include creation care, mental health, and Christians and conspiracies. But on Sunday, the 2nd of January, we began by looking at the Great Resignation. This is an economic trend in which workers are resigning en masse, seemingly in response to COVID-19. It was first coined as a term in the United States, and in April of 2021, four million American workers resigned their jobs, which is a lot, even in a country as large as the United States. But what makes this even more pressing as a topic is that research has suggested that while many people have resigned, many, many more are thinking of resigning. A Microsoft Work Trend survey found that nearly 40% of the global workforce is considering changing jobs. And so whether you have heard the term or you are thinking about the term, we figured that it would be useful to reflect on this. So I did so on Sunday, and you can listen to that message on the GBC Sermon podcast. But for now, I'm going to kind of take some time to reflect on three questions that were raised by the message. As part of the message, I reflected on the passage in 1 Kings 19 when Elijah, the prophet of the Lord, has his great resignation moment. You might remember the story after his victory against the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. He ends up being threatened with the death penalty by Queen Jezebel, and he runs away. And he proceeds to the mountain of God where he encounters God, and God asks him why he is there. To which Elijah responds that he has been very zealous for the Lord, and yet the people of Israel have abandoned the covenant with the Lord, they have broken down the altars to the Lord, and they have killed the prophets of the Lord, and he is the only one left. And instead, God kind of then sends him back with a renewed mission. But between that, he has an encounter with the Lord on the side of the mountain. There's a wind, and then an earthquake, and then a fire, we're told, that kind of tears the mountain apart. But the Lord is not in either of them. And then there's a still, small voice. And that is the experience with God. As I said, you can listen to that on the GBC Sermon podcast if you're thinking to yourself, that doesn't sound very familiar at all. But there were a number of questions that were raised by the message on the Great Resignation. And the questions are, first and foremost, if you are considering your a change of career as part of this Great Resignation, what are other considerations to take into account? I raised a couple of theological considerations. The message was focused on considering the call of God and the mission of God with any change that we bring about, and that was applied more broadly. But I mentioned things such as the importance of work as been part of the created good, talked about the importance of wisdom in the sense of timing and maintaining margin. So I'll explore a few other options as well. Secondly, COVID-19 has offered us an opportunity to contemplate change in our lives, regardless of whether we're working or not. How do we go about contemplating those changes? And then third, how do we discern the small whisper among the loud wind, earthquake, and fire? So let's jump into the big three today. The the first question has to do with the invitation, I suppose, of the Great Resignation itself. While the sermon that I preached had aspects of it that apply to those who are, say, students or those who are retirees, obviously the Great Resignation has to do with people who are working. I mentioned kind of in passing that there are a handful of theological principles and considerations that we can apply when we are thinking about changing jobs. I should probably just say, I'm not an expert on the Great Resignation, but in some of the reading that I did, depending on the field or the occupation area that you are in, the reasons for some of the changes were quite different. So it seemed from my reading that those who were in white-collar jobs in particular were led to change jobs or were thinking about changing jobs based primarily on like the work-life balance. Whereas those who perhaps were in the entertainment industry or the hospitality industry were thinking about it more from the perspective of what a job offered them, not just in terms of pay, but even just in terms of other benefits. So there are differences depending on the role that you find yourself in. However, the question kind of asks, what else can we be doing if we want to think about changing jobs from the perspective of faith? Now, there are, shall we say, I probably wouldn't want to call them secular, but there are some secular reflections, right? So for instance, one of the things that often determines a change of jobs for us has to do with our work-life balance. That's not a non-spiritual issue. It's actually a fairly significant one. You know, but whether we have work that is closer to home or that has more flexibility or that might offer us a higher remuneration package. Those things are worth considering. I think in just about any circumstance, though, we want to make sure that we're not prioritizing, say, money over everything else. There are other considerations about the jobs that we're a part of, including things like distance and work-life balance and all those sorts of things. I think we also want to be considering, I guess, what's good for us. So there's an element, you know, where a job might open up that provides me with an opportunity to grow and to stretch myself and to gain some new skills. And that can be a valuable thing to do as well. Our own mental health. The sort of environment in which we work is also fairly critical. And again, I hesitate to call those secular concepts, but those are the sorts of things that I think anyone would be thinking about. But from the perspective of faith, there are a couple of other, I think, really helpful things just to be aware of. And I mentioned them briefly on Sunday. So for instance, the very simple reality that we need to recognize that from the perspective of faith, work is not bad. Work is not evidence of the fall. The man and the woman, Adam and Eve, were created by God and placed in the garden to work it before the fall. So there's something about work. There's something about an occupation and a vocation that is part of God's perfect design for us as people. And so I think it's really helpful for us to recognize that when we are seeking work, we are seeking alignment with something that God has built into us, right? And I think that's helpful. It reminds us that, you know, our task is not just to try to make enough money to retire. I'm not sure retirement, strictly speaking, is part of God's created good, if that makes any sense. The idea that we should rush as quickly as we can to be independently wealthy so we can fish and golf and travel for the rest of our days is not quite, I think, what God has called us to. There's something really inherently powerful about doing work. Now, we may be able to rest and recreate more frequently or in better locations as we retire. But the idea that work is part of the created good, I think, is really, really helpful. I think likewise, it's helpful for us, and again, I mentioned this in the sermon, to pursue wisdom. And wisdom, of course, is in Scripture observational, but based on the fact that God has created the world in certain ways. And so, just as the material world behaves along certain patterns and in line with certain laws, you know, gravity works because that's how God made the world. There are some, I guess, moral components to how God made the world that also we should seek to discern. Right, things like honesty being the best policy, those sorts of things. And there are a couple of key factors in wisdom that I think are worth reflecting on from the perspective of faith. One of those has to do with timing, right? If you know what to do, but you don't know when to do it, you're not really counted amongst the wise. You might be smart because you know the right thing to do, but you don't know the right time. And so I think one of the things that we can be bringing to the Lord in prayer when we're thinking about changing jobs, is about our timing, making sure that our timing is good. And, you know, we worship the only wise God, the one whose timing is impeccable. And so I think that's a worthwhile thing to be bringing to God. I should probably say, you know, if we're going to be thinking about changing our job from the perspective of faith, it's appropriate to pray. And to pray, for instance, that we might find a job, an occupation, a vocation that brings satisfaction and fulfillment. Because that's ultimately, to go back to the created good, that's ultimately what God has created work to be for us. The impact of sin was the introduction of frustration to work rather than work itself. To be praying that God might lead us into a role that is satisfying and fulfilling and that brings us contentment is certainly appropriate. I think it's also appropriate to pray that our timing might be good. Sometimes we know or we have an inclination about when the timing is right, but often we could use some divine help in that space. And then I think third, I talked again briefly about the importance, if we are making a change in our occupation, to increase our work-life balance, to increase the margin that we have for family or for friends or for hobbies or for volunteering or whatever the case might be. I think we need to be really deliberate and intentional to make sure that we don't just fill up those margins. Right, so if you're going to make a decision, you know, to take a job a little bit closer to home so that you're not spending quite as much time commuting, that sounds like a great decision to make. But how are you going to protect that additional hour and a half that you gain back every day? How are you going to protect and maintain the extra 4 or 5 hours that you gain every week? What are you going to do to make sure that that actually has ongoing value and benefit rather than just being filled up with something else? I think those are fairly important things for us. I think it's also worth, and then we'll move on to the second question. I think it's worth considering, you know, is there a call of God on your life? Do you feel called into a particular area? I think that's always worth thinking about. Are we passionate about something? And if we are, can we work in that field? What are we passionate about? I know that one of the things that I really enjoy about my job is the opportunity that I have to teach because I'm passionate about teaching. It's one of the things that I really enjoy. And so I think if there's something that we know we're passionate about, is there a way to either work in that field or at least increase the percentage of our tasks that bring us life in that sense? And then to look obviously at the opportunities before us. We don't believe that things happen by accident. And so opportunities that are presented before us, we believe are part of the providential care and plan of God. So I think all of those things can be helpful, or at least I hope they're helpful, if you are considering actually changing jobs in the course of 2022. But we'll move on to the second question. One of the concerns that I had in dealing with the Great Resignation was recognizing that in many ways it's focused on people who are working. But what does it say to those who are retirees? Or what does it say to those who are students? Or what does it say to those like myself who is not thinking about leaving my job? I quite enjoy my job. I have no intention of resigning. How do we apply the Great Resignation more broadly? And there was an article by Dan, I think it's Pontefract, who was writing for Forbes magazine. And he reckons that perhaps we should call the Great Resignation the Great Contemplation. Because COVID-19 and the impact of that over the last couple of years has really invited lots of us, regardless of whether we're working or not, whether or not we're happy in our jobs or not, to reconsider our priorities, reconsider our lives in light of COVID-19. And so the second question is really wrapped around that. If we are to contemplate the impact of COVID-19 and make some appropriate changes, how do we go about doing that? And I think that this is, I think it's fairly common sense. But I want to begin with something that I think we sometimes skip in the process. And that is that if we're going to make any changes from COVID-19, if we're going to make any changes in our lives in general, we do need to be quite intentional about that. One of the challenges I think that we face as people, as families, as churches, as organizations, as institutions in this pandemic is the temptation to kind of snap back to how things used to be, to kind of try to get back to some sense of normalcy. And I think that that speaks to something really important in us as human beings, right? It's the idea that we prefer stability. And I think we do, right? There's something really powerful about things being normal, because once things are normal, we don't have to think so much about everything, right? You know, in stressful circumstances, part of the stress is that we don't know what the future will hold. We don't know what we should be doing. And so every decision that we make takes more energy. When you're in a new job, for instance, if you can remember being in one, or a new circumstance, everything that you do just takes longer because you're learning things on the fly. When things are normal, though, we have a little bit more time and energy and margin in our hearts and our minds to think about stuff. And so I think if we're going to be rethinking our lives in the light of COVID-19, we do need to be intentional. And that intentionality has two parts to it. First of all, we do need to let things settle down a little bit. We do need to have some sense of normalcy so that we have a little bit of margin to do some of the creative thinking that change requires. One of my reflections last year, as I kind of watched our church slowly re-engage after 2020, was that our congregation as a whole, and I think to the same degree, you know, our staff and myself, we weren't ready to have the big conversations about what needs to change or what lessons have we learned until things felt normal again. Like, people were just, they weren't tired in, you know, March and April of 2021, but there was a sense of not quite fragility, but just that sense of kind of easing our way back into it. Is this the new normal? What's this going to look like? How is this all going to feel? And it wasn't until we got to about May, which of course was just before we went right back into lockdown, that I began to feel that our community of faith was beginning to feel a little bit more normal. And what excited me about that was the first opportunity then that we had to ask some of the big questions. So I think if you have come through COVID-19 as an individual, as a family, as a couple, as a life group, as a ministry, a church, whatever the case might be, we have to be intentional to, first of all, allow a sense of normalcy to pervade our space again so that we have the margin, but then be intentional not to snap back or accept the new normal as the new normal, as the final form, shall we say. And so we have to be intentional to kind of give ourselves some space. And then when we feel like we've got a little bit of capacity for creativity, to then really engage in the question. I think that's really critical for us if we're going to draw any lessons from COVID-19. And then once we have the capacity and we can stop and ask the questions, then I think it becomes a matter of common sense, right? I think we want to look back on the last, you know, 2 years or longer and ask ourselves some questions around, you know, what really worked, you know, what was really life-giving over these last 2 years? What part of the last 2 years did I feel I gained something from, right? And so I think, you know, many people, you know, despite the challenges of working from home or doing home-based learning, felt that there was something really positive about being around the family a little bit more. You know, like I know that as a family, you know, particularly in the lockdown in 2021, I mean, we had dinner together more frequently in those 12 weeks than we had for the last year, probably, you know, because everyone was home every night because there was nowhere else to go. So there's something really lovely about that. Well, how do we then implicate, or sorry, how do we kind of bring that forward into the new normal? I think we, at the same time, I want to ask what didn't work. What did we find particularly hard? Where did we find that there was less life given in those circumstances? I think we want to be asking questions around what our priorities are now. You know, I think one of the things that has changed for people, particularly in relationship to work, has been the balance of the time spent in the office and the time spent at home. But the recognition that there are probably some tasks that we can do from home that we can actually do very efficiently and really quite do it quite well. So I think we want to be asking questions about our priorities, the positives and the negatives, and any other lessons that have been learned, and then do the hard work of actually implementing them. And this is why I believe we have to give ourselves some time for things to feel a little bit normal. Because when we are maxed out, when we're tired, when we're still trying to manage every day, we just don't have the creativity to see a new preferred future. We just want to get through the day. But once we have that margin, I think there's some wonderful opportunities for us to reshape our lives, to reshape our priorities, to find a new normal that is actually a better normal than it was prior to COVID. Whether that has to do with our job or whether it has to do with how we are managing our retirement or how we are handling our period of study or how we are spending time with family or, you know, in my case, how we lead organizations, how we think about matters of faith, for instance. So all of these things I think are really important, and there is an opportunity. And I know that, you know, we've had a lockdown and then kind of a long period of feeling our way forward, and then a lockdown and then a short period of feeling our way forward. And now we're kind of right back in the midst of the Omicron variant, and caseloads are going crazy. And I think there's a growing sense of insecurity and uncertainty about what the immediate future holds. So we're not at the point where we can make those decisions, but I do hope that you and hope for us as a leadership that we don't let the opportunity slip by. Because there is an opportunity here to really make some significant changes. Because when your life is so disrupted, you see things from a different perspective, and that is incredibly valuable. So I hope that you, whether you are working, retired, studying, or anything else, might take that opportunity to contemplate the opportunities for change coming out of the COVID-19 global pandemic. The third question and the final question that I want to address briefly today is actually taken from the passage that I reflected on. I mentioned it's in 1 Kings chapter 19 when Elijah has come to Mount Horeb, the mountain of God, and has this encounter with the Lord. After the Lord asks him why he's there, he then tells Elijah to come out on the mountain, for he is about to pass by. And then there is this wind that, you know, throws rocks over the place, and there's an earthquake, then there's a fire. But in each case, we're told that the Lord was not in the wind, the earthquake, or the fire. And then there came a still small voice, a gentle whisper. And at that, Elijah covers his face. It's like Elijah has recognized and realized that God is not in the storm, but in the still small voice. So the question was asked, how do you discern the small whisper among the loud wind, earthquake, and fire? And for those of you who have been, long-time listeners of The Big Three, you'll know that we come around to this sort of question, the question of discerning the voice and the will of God, relatively frequently. And it's well worth coming round to it again. When I was doing some of my reading for the sermon, I was reading not only articles on the Great Resignation from various papers and magazines and whatever else I could find online, but I also did a little bit of reading in a commentary in particular on 1 and 2 Kings. The author made a really interesting point about the still small voice and the contrast with the wind, the earthquake, and the fire. And that was in relationship to what Elijah had just experienced. So he had just experienced this mighty victory over the prophets of Baal, where God had responded in fire and then in storm, right? The rains had come and broken the drought that had lasted for 3 years. But prior to the contest on Mount Carmel, Elijah encounters a steward of the king named Obadiah. And in their interaction twice, Obadiah makes reference to something that he had done while Jezebel was persecuting the prophets of the Lord. And that was that he had hidden 100 of them, 50, in two different caves and had provided for them. And the commentator made the point that Obadiah's resistance to the oppressive regime was not wind, earthquake, and fire, but was this gentle, small, silent event, right? Hiding these guys in these caves and caring for their needs. And Elijah finds himself in a cave on Mount Horeb, and it's in the still, small voice that God speaks. And the commentator's reflection, or the direction of his reflection, was wrapped around, the challenge to Elijah and I think to us to where God is at work. So I think sometimes we expect and want God to act in the wind, the earthquake, the fire, right? To make it really obvious and big and dramatic. And we go, there's God. And yet God's ways seem more frequently to be found in the still small voice, in the gentle whispers, in the overlooked places, shall we say. And I thought that was a helpful reflection in terms of not only kind of understanding what the author is intending in 1 Kings, but also then to the question of discernment. Because if we are looking for the big thing, right, if we're looking for the dramatic moment, then we are, shall we say, almost automatically going to miss the small because we're looking at the wrong thing, if that makes any sense. I've said this before. I can't remember the context, but as I've said it, it sounds strikingly familiar. I wish Matt or Jess were here. They might be able to remember. And maybe you recall if you've listened to the podcast before. But if we're focused on looking for the big dramatic work of God, we're going to find it harder to identify the still small voice. And to some degree, it would be better for us to focus on the still small voice than on the dramatic, because if we're focused on the still small voice, the dramatic will still grab our attention, but we're better placed to hear from God. On Boxing Day, Matt Willis, the normal host of The Big Three, preached at the end of our Christmas service, Finding Yourself in Christmas, and focused on Herod and the Magi. And one of the applications that he had made in that message was the importance of, if I can put words in Matt's mouth, spending quantity time with God rather than just seeking for quality time, right? Just spending more time with God and spending time listening, like actually listening, trying to discern the still small voice. I'm not particularly good at journaling, but I know many people who are. And what they will do is that they will take some time in their quiet time or time with the Lord, and they'll write down impressions or thoughts or feelings, a sense of the still small voice, if I could put it this way, right? I'm sure if there was something dramatic and an angel appeared to them, or, you know, a bush burst into flames but wasn't consumed and the voice of the Lord spoke to them, they'd write that down too. But they're writing down impressions, writing down kind of a sense of what God may be saying. And there's a conditionality to that. Like, it might not be the voice of God, right? It's a still small voice. I might have misheard the whisper, right? I might have leaned in, but I kind of may have missed a critical piece of it. But one of the things that they are then able to do, and this is why I wish I were better at journaling, is that they go back over the last 4 or 5 weeks, 4 or 5 months, the last year of notes, and discern some patterns within them. You know, that there are certain things that God continues to seem to be saying that lead them in a particular direction. I think that seems to me to be a wonderful way to discern the still small voice of God. You know, we want to kind of pick up the small clues and the small hints along the way. And so spending a lot of time with God is helpful. Spending time in His Word, of course, is always valuable because it allows us to recognize the shape of God's actions in the world. So when we see things happening that are almost below the radar, right? They're kind of beneath the surface. They almost go unnoticed. We can see them and go, you know what? That looks suspiciously like the hand of God. That looks like the sort of thing that God might be at work in. And we can begin to pay attention to the patterns and the shapes of God's activity. And I think that's a helpful way for us to more readily discern. But ultimately, and I think this comes back again to spending time, we need to become familiar with God. When my wife and I, we don't do this very often, but occasionally we've kind of been parts of like trivia nights. And we're a devastating team together because we know different things from one another, but we also know what one another knows, right? And so there's a real sense of synergy because we know each other well. And when you know someone well, you know the sorts of things that they know. You also know the things that they're passionate about. If you've ever gone shopping, I'm sure you have, for someone that you love and you know them really well, you'll see something, you go, oh, this will be perfect for them. Because you know enough about their character, their likes, their tastes, to kind of be aware of that sort of stuff. Whereas, we've just come out of Christmas, so you've probably had to do this. If you've had to buy something for someone you don't know very well, you know, like those Kris Kringle things or whatever the case might be, you know, that's really difficult because I don't know the person particularly well, so I'm kind of guessing. The more we invest in our relationship with God, the more we know of His character and of His plans and purposes, the more likely we are going to be able to discern and hear the still small voice. Because the slightest hint will be enough for us to go, yes, I hear you. And I think that becomes, you know, obviously a lifelong journey. It's not something you can just kind of learn in an afternoon. It's something that I think we spend a lifetime doing as followers of Jesus. So I hope that's been helpful for you. We really like this series, and as I said at the outset, I feel like we felt it was important enough to do a summer edition, even if it was just me for a week, to be further reflecting on things that are happening in our world, such as the Great Resignation. Thank you to those of you who did submit those questions. And if you would like to be a part of that, make sure that you join us for our online service this Sunday, gbconline.org.au, 9:30 Australian Eastern Standard Time, or make sure you follow the GBC Sermon Podcast and click this QR code if you are part of the service to participate in that as well. Hope you have a great week. Thank you again for joining us with the Big Three, Matt and Jess. We'll not be back, I don't think, next week, but I think the week after that they will be. You'll have to put up with me for another week, but looking forward to continuing to explore what it means for us to follow Jesus all of our days. Hope to see you or have you join us again next week. And until then, God bless.